It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The president will spend his time up there on Capitol Hill twisting arms in support of the two immigration bills that are there before the House, talking with Republicans tonight about the importance of getting at least one of those measures through. Officially, the White House supports both of them, but the compromise bill is the one that they would more likely like to see pass. The president saying that these bills, or at least one of them, are needed to end the crisis of families being separated on the border.
President Trump will need all of his deal-making skills to pull this one off, leveraging the horribly unpopular idea of separating children from their parents at the border in order to get Congress to move on immigration reform.
As a result of Democrat-supported loopholes in our federal laws, most illegal immigrant families and minors from Central America who arrive unlawfully at the border cannot be detained together.
The president is blaming Democrats, but it was his administration's decision to invoke a zero-tolerance policy at the border. President Trump insisting that years of previous White Houses not enforcing the law has had a profoundly detrimental effect on the nation.
Roughly 500,000 illegal immigrant family units and minors from Central America have been released into the United States since 2014. At unbelievably great taxpayer expense.
The president is pushing Congress to make changes to the law to allow children to stay with their parents during the prosecution and deportation process. He also wants a $25 billion commitment to build a border wall and broader immigration reforms.
We want them to come in through the process, through the legal system. And we want, ultimately, a merit-based system where people come in based on merit.
Sandy Rios with you. That was John Roberts on Fox. And, of course, he was describing what happened. You know, everything changes in a few hours. That was about, what, 12 hours ago? Not quite. But John Roberts was talking about President Trump coming over to Congress, which he did last night. He met with the congressional Republicans behind closed doors. This is what I think is happening. There are two bills. Now, could I just interject? Keep in mind, these bills are not related to the children allegedly being horrifically, terribly separated from their parents, like babies from their nursing mothers, which is just completely overstated, exaggerated, whipping up people into a frenzy. But I'm going to come back to that in a few minutes. But there are two bills that came up in different ways. The Goodlatte bill came up several months ago. It was the bill that conservatives sort of held their nose and said, all right, this is the best we can do. We'll go for this. But the leadership never brought it up for a vote. So now they are going to bring it up for a vote. And with that, they're bringing up a compromise bill. Well, that should be alert you right away to what this bill is all about. This is being, of course, put together by Paul Ryan, whose dream has been, you know, to allow as many illegal immigrants into the country as possible since he's been serving in Congress. His record is that exactly. And so the bill is turning out to be nothing like what we had seen. My understanding is that both bills now are going to address this whole business of children being separated from their parents, however exaggerated it may be at this current time. And the other important part about this is, regardless, I think John goes on to his report to say that they're alleging that the president is supporting the Ryan compromise bill. I'm not sure that's true. I'm telling you that I think there will be, the vote will be tomorrow evening, tomorrow, Thursday. I don't think that there, my understanding is, that there probably still are not enough votes to pass either bill. And I have to tell you, please separate in your mind your whatever concerns you might have about the separation of children and parents, those two bills are crafted to do other things besides address that. The immigration issue is very complex, and neither of them accomplish what should be accomplished, which is securing our borders and making immigration lawful, bringing people in the right way in the right order. The Goodlatte bill comes closer than the other one, but that's kind of the update on that, and we will know more. We're going to be talking about this a lot today, but for now, I'll just mention this one thing. When the president walked back through the rotunda, you know, the rotunda is so beautiful. The Congress buildings are, the congressional buildings are so gorgeous. Many of you have seen them. Well, so interesting that the president should be accosted by a Democratic intern shouting him the F word. Yeah, a Democratic intern serving in Congress. And then the members of the Hispanic caucus out front with their placards screaming, especially Michelle Lujan Grisham. She said it was the worst thing she'd ever seen in her career. And so they're yelling at the president, showing these pictures that allegedly show children in cages, which, of course, we know now that many of those pictures, alleged pictures, were taken during the time of the Obama administration. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about all of it. But this is the way, this is the lack of civility that we're seeing in the nation's capital. And this is what the president is having to endure by the immigration radicals. And I'll make my point clearer in just a minute. But I want to move to this because yesterday there was this important hearing in the Senate, in the House. And this was the Inspector General Michael Horowitz being grilled. And I want you to hear, Catherine Herridge, by the way, has a great report on it. Let's listen to hers first, and then I'll jump in.
They prejudged the outcome of the Hillary Clinton investigation before the investigation ended, and these exact same FBI agents and attorneys prejudged the outcome of the Russia investigation before it even began.
During a second day of marathon testimony, lawmakers pressed Inspector General Michael E. Horowitz over what Republicans describe as political bias at the FBI impacting both presidential campaigns. They point to a newly discovered August 2016 text between FBI agent Peter Strzok and FBI lawyer Lisa Page saying they would stop Trump from being elected.
I wonder who the we is and the we'll stop it.
If we can go through a couple of them, or the broader group beyond that. We have found three additional FBI agents.
And some transitioned to the Russia special counsel investigation.
Do they still work for Mueller?
That's my understanding is no.
In July 2016, agents Strzok also pivoted from the Clinton emails to collusion.
Do you believe the political bias shown by this text had an effect on the initiation of the Russia investigation?
That's a matter we've got under review.
Horowitz testified a fourth forensic review of the Strzok Page FBI phones uncovered the explosive text in May. Congress wasn't immediately notified.
We sent it to the Office of Deputy Attorney General and...
So Mr. Rosenstein?
In his office.
The point is, when you did get it, Mr. Rosenstein decided we couldn't get it until your report came out. He sat on it for a month of time.
Another lawmaker questioned why the report was silent on allegations the Clinton server may have been hacked and the FBI failed to follow up.
But that's not in your report.
That's correct.
The president weighed in.
When you read that IG report about how she got away with what she got away with, it's a disgrace.
All right, that was Catherine Herridge's report last night. Now, this is incredible information, so stay with me, please. I'm going to try to make things as clear as I possibly can. Don't think that those demonstrations out front, the wailing of the mainstream reporters about the separation at the border is not mindfully by them covering up what's actually happened on Capitol Hill. We learned some really incredible things yesterday. You heard a bit of that in Catherine's report. One of the things she said, but might not have been clear, is the AG, or Inspector General, talked about in great detail how hard it was for him, in terms of his investigation, to uncover the Strzok Page texts, how they had to go to experts, how they had to go to the Pentagon, how they had to break some sort of a technology thing with the phones, and how they had to try four times. And the conclusion is what? That most damning text of Peter Strzok where he said, no, we'll stop him. We'll stop him. That was the text that was somehow not in the collection of texts that the FBI turned over to congressional members who had the right to oversee what was happening. And it looks like to the IG either. He had to go to great lengths to uncover those texts, and they're suspecting now there may be even more texts that they haven't uncovered. Now, we also found out yesterday that, and we've heard hints of this, but I just want to underscore this. We are hearing that it looks like, you see, when FBI agents do investigations or interviews, they fill out what's called 302s. It's like you reporting, writing down what you, the interaction that just happened between you and another person, just so you have maybe your diary, a record of it, whatever. The FBI agent writes down as clearly as they can what transpired. It looks as though that FBI upper officials changed, allegedly, we believe, have changed the 302s written by regular agents who have been doing interviews with Mrs. Clinton, and also certainly with General Flynn, that the 302s were altered by higher-ups. That is just not done, ladies and gentlemen. That is just not done. Michael Horowitz said he's going to follow up on that. And Mark Meadows had an incredible bombshell at the end of the hearing yesterday. It was a five-hour hearing. Let's just listen to Congressman Meadows make his case.
Mr. Horowitz, I want to come back to something we talked about earlier, the disclosure of FBI Attorney 1 and FBI right. Attorney 2. And you said, I think I'm correct, that they did not want that divulged because they actually worked in counterintelligence. Is that correct?
That's what we were told by the FBI.
Okay, but you know who the people are.
Correct.
And I would say, based on your report, I know who they are. And what I guess I'm concerned about is you know that they don't work for the counterintelligence division.
Well, two of the agents do.
Agent, I'm talking about attorneys.
There's one lawyer who's in here. So it's there are five people total.
Right.
Paige Strook, two other agents.
But you had a dialogue between FBI Attorney 1 and 2.
Correct.
And those two attorneys, do they not work for Trish Anderson?
Those two attorneys work in the Office of General Counsel.
Yeah, and so would one of those attorneys be Sally Moyer?
I'm going to defer to what the FBI
But they don't work in counterintelligence. I mean, if that's the reason the FBI is giving, they're giving you false information because they work for the General Counsel.
Just add, they were talking
about— Is the other one Kevin Kleinsmith?
They were talking about the other attorney there that we have their text messages in here that they were concerned about along with the other two. I'm not here to— articulate the FBI's.
All right, I'm going to interrupt because we're running out of time. But now here's the thing. This is what's happened. The FBI has said they redacted those names of the attorneys because they were working in counterintelligence. Mark Meadows points out, no, they were not. So their names were taken out, not even given, you know, not given to congressional oversight people because why? Well, we don't know why. And as a matter of fact, I told you yesterday, and I'm going to repeat it, that one of those attorneys is Tashina Gower. Tashina Gower is what this the writer Sundance that I often quote refers to as the, well, let's just say, close associate of Eric Holder. She is from the law firm and school of former Obama wingman Attorney General Eric Holder. We also know that she was in the middle of all of this, even though you've never heard her name before. Tashina Gower was in the middle of the Trump investigation and the Hillary email investigation. So this is the conclusion that Sundance has reached. Yes, the DOJ FBI lawyer at the heart of the Clinton email investigation, the DOJ FBI lawyer hired by Eric Holder at his firm and later at the DOJ FBI lawyer who was transferred to the Clinton probe, the DOJ FBI lawyer at the epicenter of the Wiener laptop case, the only one from the mid-year exam who spoke to New York, the DOJ FBI lawyer who constructs the FISA applications on behalf of Maine Justice, just happens to be the same DOJ FBI lawyer recommending to AG General Sessions that he recuse himself, Tashina Gower. So you can see why there is so much more to come on this. And I have one more article. I'm actually going to start with it on the other side. I was going to go on to immigration, but you have to hear this. Remember when we had that dust-up about New York field agents rebelling against Comey over the Hillary email scandal? We now understand what that was all about. I'm going to share it with you when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. Just hit *345. That's *345. *345.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
I approached this year's birthday with just a touch of unrest.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
I sensed a gap between expectations and the reality of experience. One Saturday morning, I listed the things I've been asking God for the past 15 years. And in a column beside each expectation, I wrote to what degree I had seen Jesus fulfill answers. Then, on my actual birthday, I talked to the Lord about these expectations, promises, and heart yearnings. As a result, the Lord gave me a sense of peace about my relationship with Him, my family, and relational expectations. Every physical birthday brings you and me closer to a final hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Back when I was in high school, our summer reading list included classics like Mark Twain and William Faulkner. But in Wando, South Carolina, the reading list is filled with authors who are anti-police. Among the choices for freshmen in English 1 college prep are two books that address racism and police brutality. The Hate U Give tells the story of a person whose best friend was shot and killed by police. The All-American Boys is about a character who's roughed up by police after being wrongly accused of shoplifting. The books have drawn outrage from police officers and their families. The local Fraternal Order of Police accused the school district of indoctrination, of fostering distrust of police. The school district acknowledged the controversy but refused to pull the books. In other words, they have no problem with public school classrooms being used as anti-cop indoctrination centers. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I want to continue with what I was talking about because this is so important. Sidney Powell, who has been our guest, is a former federal prosecutor. And she has written the first account that I have seen about what happened when agents in New York found 140,000 Hillary Clinton emails, including the entire time she was Secretary of State. They found her email exchanges with President Trump, with other members of cabinet, people that were interacting with her illegally on this illegal server. So remember that James Comey has just announced, you know, no, we don't think there was any intent and we're not going to bring charges. And then suddenly these agents who are investigating Anthony Weiner because he was a perverted public official involved in the most horrendous kinds of pornography, sending vulgar, obscene pictures of himself to young girls, they start investigating it and then they are just shocked. And the problem is that James Comey, the FBI director, has just announced, there's nothing to see. She didn't mean it. Mrs. Clinton didn't mean it. Now they find 140,000 on on the laptop of this guy who is sending out porn. Heaven knows where this stuff has gone and who has access. This is shocking and very concerning. So I'm going to pick up with Sydney's account of this. She says, we already knew that President Barack Obama was emailing her on her unsecure ClintonEmail.com server. Cheryl Mills had written an email noting how obvious it was to anyone that this was not state.gov. That's the official server for government, and therefore unsecure. This was a gargantuan problem for the FBI and for Mrs. Clinton, and other people knew about it too. Indeed, according to the Inspector General, 39 high-ranking FBI agents knew of it, along with the New York office and people in the New York U.S. Attorney's Office. The New York FBI informed them all during a secure video conference on September 28th, chaired by Andrew McCabe. One agent said the announcement of finding hundreds of thousands of Clinton emails on Weiner's laptop was like dropping a bomb in the middle of the meeting. The New York agent Sweeney followed up with two calls to McCabe later that evening after McCabe did not call him as promised. So what did McCabe, Comey, and Strzok do? They sat on it until police officers in New York and FBI agents in New York threatened to expose them. Do you remember us talking about that? I was hearing about this from the inside, said there's going to be a revolt. There was a revolt against Comey. There's a revolt against leadership at the FBI if they don't do something because of what they're finding in Anthony Weiner's laptop. Sidney Powell goes on. By October 28th, it was only 11 days before the election. Comey panicked. The jig was up. They had been hiding it for 3 weeks. Comey's guilt and concern for his own career caused him to realize he could not keep it quiet any longer. Everything exploded when Comey wrote a letter to Congress vaguely reporting the discovery of, quote, additional emails that appear to be related to the investigation, end quote. He wrote further, the FBI cannot assess at this time whether or not the material may be significant. On October 30th, 2016, the Daily Caller reported that the Department of Justice had not even sought a warrant for review of the 350,000 Clinton email. New York Police Department officers in November of 2016, who had seen evidence that on Weiner's laptop threatened to blow the whistle. The Justice Department shut them down by allegedly threatening to indict NYPD officers on the two-year-old death of Eric Garner if the NYPD disclosed it. In a stunning assertion, Director Comey told the Inspector General he did not know Anthony Weiner was married to Huma Abedin. Either Comey was bald-faced lying, which is punishable under U.S. law, or the level of ignorance and incompetence inherent in that representation alone warranted his termination. Moreover, if Comey's claim were true, then Comey, McCabe, and Strzok should have flown into action at the mere thought of a perverted stranger in a sexual offense investigation having 350,000 email of the Secretary of State, including highly classified information covering her entire tenure. From the FBI's DOJ's handling of the Weiner problem, there is more than enough evidence to demand immediate production of the Weiner laptop, and all emails should be obtained from NSA or otherwise be given to an independent special prosecutor for a full and thorough investigation. This is not all of Sydney's article, but we're going to put this on our Facebook page. It is the FBI, the DOJ, and Hillary Clinton's huge Weiner problem. It's stunning. It's probably the most important article I've read today, and I'm going to share with you. So I hope that you will access that as soon as we get it up. All right, I want to go back to immigration because we must. You know that we must. Let's see. William LaJeunesse did an interesting report last night about how the polls are going, how people are feeling about this. Let's listen.
We are going to end catch and release.
From the campaign trail to the Oval Office, Trump's rhetoric on immigration always seemed like a winner. But now, even his supporters say he's gone too far.
No one wants to see families separated. I think President Trump said he doesn't want to see families separated.
See or hear. Ah! Most Republicans support Trump in reforming asylum laws and increasing interior enforcement. But when it comes to actually ending catch and release, which in this case means separating and detaining children apart from their parents, pictures and sound of them crying out is political dynamite.
I have not talked to a single person who's looked at those images and said, well, it's necessary. That's the only way we're going to succeed in, you know, slowing down the inflow of immigrants.
Republicans, even immigration hawks, who've complained for years about lax enforcement, abandon the president on this issue.
We have zero tolerance for anything that separates families, right? And so clearly Utah has strong feelings about this.
This practice that is happening currently at the border is inhumane, and we wish that it is stopped.
More than 10,000 clergy signed a letter urging the White House to back down. The Church of Latter-day Saints said they are deeply troubled by the zero-tolerance policy. Across the country, rallies against Trump. The governors of Massachusetts and New York will no longer send their National Guard to the border. Today, the governor of Virginia recalled his. Utah's governor called the policy inhumane, while in Colorado, no state funds can be used to shelter immigrants.
The amount of trauma that these people have endured is unspeakable. And to make them go through that even more is just actually the worst thing I could imagine.
While the administration blames Democrats, two new polls show that many voters blame the president. About 70%, Brett, oppose this child policy. And as you well know, when polls talk, politicians listen.
Yeah, indeed. All right. So that was William Lajeunesse on Fox News. So now, I probably don't need to convince you that the press is in a frenzy about this. Yesterday, actually, I did an interview on Boston NPR, and I didn't ask for it. Let's play just a little bit of that, because, of course, I'm the, you know what? They treated me respectfully, but I know what they think. I'm not stupid. I am Exhibit A of their opposition. And so let's just listen to the very first part of it, clip 16.
National debate over separation of children from their families at the border continues. The Trump administration enacted a policy of prosecuting all unlawful border crossings instead of detaining families together as civil cases. And because of that, children have to be separated from their parents. Republicans like Michigan Congressman Fred Upton are calling for an end to this ugly and inhumane practice. But there are supporters. Sandy Rios is host of the Sandy Rios in the Morning Show on the American Family Radio Network. Sandy, we're hearing the sound of children crying for their parents. Make your case.
Well, you know, who wants to see children separated from their parents? All of our hearts go out, but that doesn't mean that it's exactly what it's being presented as. You know, we have so many Americans consigned to prisons because they've broken the law. Now, we don't have any audio that I know of American children being separated from their parents when they go to prison. But I guarantee you there would be a lot of cries and sadness. It would break your heart. Is that the fault of the American people, or is it the fault of the parent who has broken the law? All right, well, that's the way it started. And, of course, it's not that long. We'll put it on our Facebook page. You can listen to it. But the point is, of course, their point is to show how irrational and foolish someone like me is. I don't care about that. You know, I've been in this business a long time, so I never make this about myself. Look, I try to speak the truth. No matter what the consequences, really, that's my goal. And I try to make sure that I'm trustworthy for you, not only just in terms of the facts, but also trying to be faithful to what I believe God's word says. Now, look, God didn't talk about this, about whether some children should be separated from their families if the parents have broken the law and have to be sent to incarcerated, even temporarily. I don't know what God thinks about that. I sort of think he thinks the law is important because certainly as General Sessions, who's been roundly criticized for this, Romans 13 tells us that the laws are given to keep order and we must respect them. And so, but I don't want to get off the track too much. I just want to say that this is being, this situation on the border is being misrepresented and overstated. And it's happening for a purpose. In fact, you know, the left uses, as I've said to you before, these kinds of incidences where they exaggerate and overstate. They do it all the time. Have you not noticed this? Whether it's Ferguson or Trayvon Martin or whether it's you fill in the blank of all the urgent crises that they create. And they Almost, I wonder if they just don't overplay their hand now almost every time. I wonder about that now, if they have just gotten a little bit silly, so that you can kind of see that they are, like, who was the congressman that was weeping during the hearing yesterday with Elijah? Was it Elijah Cummings? I think it was. It wasn't even relevant to the hearing that he was in, but he started weeping about these poor children. Well, you know, how can you argue with that? It's like, when did you stop beating your wife? Of course we don't want children crying for their parents. Who wants that? But it's being misrepresented and packaged and presented as a bludgeon for people who believe that actually law and order should prevail and some solution should come to this that is lawful. Okay, so let's talk about the laws for a second, because we need to do that. One of the reasons we're in this situation is because a bill that was signed under President Obama, and that was a loophole, immigration loophole, that separated more than 250,000 children, child border crosses. In fact, Barack Obama spoke about this back in 2014. Let's listen. Clip 7.
Our message absolutely is, don't send your children unaccompanied on trains or through a bunch of smugglers. We don't even know how many of these kids don't make it and may have been waylaid into sex trafficking or killed because they fell off a train. We have no way of tracking that. So that is our direct message to the families in Central America. Do not send your children to the borders. If they do make it, they'll get sent back. More importantly, they may not make it.
All right, that was President Obama expressing the same thing that was happening then. And it was happening as a result of several bills passed by Congress. One of them was passed in 2008. It was known as the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act. And many Christian groups were behind this. And could I just interject what I said a few days ago, and I will repeat, some evangelical Christians, I think, have lost their minds. They have replaced the reason that comes with faith in Christ, taking on the mind of Christ, with some sort of a foolish lack of boundaries, like for gay people, not protecting them by saying there is a right and a wrong, but saying, oh, you're born that way, and we understand, and making excuses, making everything soft. So that the fall, there's no criticism. It's sort of, it's a cultural trend, and they're doing that now with prison sentencing, which we'll get into on another day. But a lot of Christian groups are behind this. But what it actually did was it allowed unaccompanied minors who came from Central America, not Mexico, I don't think, but Central America, to come into the country and stay. So they did. They came in the tens and hundreds of thousands. They came. And they are still coming. And that's part of what started this. That's not all that started it, though. There was a judicial decision, the Flores versus Reno, which also contributed to this. And as a matter of fact, let me read to you what Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, says about this. He says, because the department's ability to detain family units is effectively vitiated by this Flores settlement, those tasked with enforcing our immigration laws face a stark choice. Separate families by detaining parents and releasing children, or engage in the catch-and-release policies made popular by the Obama administration, which means they just let people come in. They didn't care. They don't even know where they are. Huckabee Sanders was asked in a press conference, I'm not sure if it was yesterday, sometime this week, about Laura Bush's comments about how offended and upset she is about this practice on the border. She says we have to do something. And so Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked about that. This is what Sarah said.
I didn't speak directly with him about that, but I'm happy to address the concerns and echo what Secretary Nielsen said. Look, we share the concern. The president himself said that he doesn't like this process. But once again, it's Congress's job to change the law. We're calling on them to do exactly that. And frankly, this law was actually signed into effect in 2008 under her husband's leadership, not under this administration. We're not the ones responsible for creating this problem. We've inherited it. But we're actually the first administration stepping up and trying to fix it.
All right. So, and General Sessions said yesterday at a National Sheriff's Association meeting, we do not want to separate children from their parents. We do not want adults to bring children into this country unlawfully, placing them at risk. But we do have a policy of prosecuting adults who flout our laws to come here illegally instead of waiting their turn or claiming asylum at every port of entry. And as a matter of fact, in another article I read, it talked about how these alleged kids with their parents don't seem to know their parents very well. Even in general conversation, they didn't know basic facts about the alleged parents. That's the problem. We have the drug smugglers, traffickers coming across the border with children claiming that they are family. And also they are giving scripted answers about asking for asylum. They're saying the same things in the same words. It's all a mess. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Blessed is the man who doesn't walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scoffers. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. One word has proven to be debilitating in our society, the D word, discrimination. What we fail to realize is discrimination is not automatically a dirty concept. We discriminate against thieves and murderers when we send them to prison. We discriminate against sexual predators by keeping them away from children. And yes, we rightly discriminate against men when we keep them out of women's restrooms. According to Psalm 1, we have to discriminate against the counsel of the wicked in order to be blessed. Good thing God isn't debilitated by the D word.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The AFA Journal covers critical contemporary issues that American families care about. Here's Ann Reed.
I had this awesome opportunity to go to the border of Israel and Syria, where a medical camp is being operated by the Friendships Ministry, which is out of Lake Charles, Louisiana. So God is using that ministry to soften hearts, I would say, in a tremendous way.
Sign up for a free one-year subscription to the AFA Journal at afajournal.org.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. We as God's people need to be good stewards of all that He has given us. That is so important, and that's what drives me each day as I break down the latest financial numbers and talk to listeners across the country about their use of the money that God has entrusted to them. Join me each morning from 8 to 10 Central and Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Time for Financial Issues right here on American Family Radio.
Why does AFA keep harping on the dangers of the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why? It's because we've looked into the eyes of the mother of a teen suicide victim. Patrice Bright was mom to a normal, happy 14-year-old cheerleader dealing with the challenges any teenager faces. But her outlook on life was apparently darkened after she binge-watched season 1 of 13 Reasons Why. Anna Bright chose to deal with her temporary teen problems with the permanent act of suicide. Several other teens and young adults have made the same choice after watching this show, which glorifies suicide. The American Family Association and others have pointed out the dangers of the program to Netflix. But, apparently motivated by money, Netflix has just released season 2. Our hope is to save teen lives by getting Netflix to pull the series before another tragedy occurs. You can learn more and sign the 13 Reasons Why petition at afa.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and UN Ambassador Nikki Haley struck an important blow for freedom yesterday by denouncing and withdrawing from the odious UN Human Rights Council. Recall that before there was a Human Rights Council, there was a Human Rights Commission. That commission became a parody of a UN agency with its tolerance for members who routinely violate human rights, its anti-Semitic obsession with alleged Israeli violations, and its dependence on underwriting from appalled U.S. taxpayers. The Bush 43 administration pulled the plug, inducing what was supposed to be a much-needed institutional overhaul. It didn't happen. President Obama nonetheless decided to join the resulting Human Rights Council. Ambassador Haley rightly labeled it a cesspool of political bias that is still riddled with human rights violators rabidly hostile towards Israel and reliant on U.S. subventions. It's high time we're out of there. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The immigration system has been a really bad, bad system, probably the worst anywhere in the world. We're going to try and see if we can fix it.
Most illegal immigrant families and minors from Central America who arrive unlawfully at the border cannot be detained together or removed together only released. Give us a third option, which we have been requesting since last year, the legal authority to detain and promptly remove families together as a unit.
The president alone can fix it with this flick of a pen by signing a presidential order to end the agonizing screams of small children.
So you see what's happening here. That was, of course, the president and then Chuck Schumer, and the minority leader in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, is telling us we're not going to pass any kind of fix on this. We're not going to do it because we love what's happening to the president. We've got him. We think we've got him. We are not going to pass legislation. We are not. That's what he just said. The president alone can take the, he could just take this pen and now that's all he needs. That's what he says. We're not going to do anything, even though we know that it was the trafficking bill of 2008. It was the judicial decision Flores versus whatever the other person was. Those decisions and plus other congressional bills in the past are what have made it impossible to stop this. Barack Obama ignored the law. Did catch and release. Just let them go. And so they are all over this country. Now, they keep telling us they're only 12 million. Are you kidding me? They've been saying 12 million for at least 10 years. That, do you? I recognize some of you live in areas of the country where you're not seeing the changes. I've been to those areas of the country, and I find it ironic. Those are some of the areas of the country where people complain the most about complaints about illegal immigration because they don't see it. They don't experience it. But most of you in most parts of the country, I think, have seen the changes and are concerned about it. And so just some of the common sense things that are happening. Ted Cruz has introduced a bill that would fix the problem, such as it is. It would keep families together. He says we can fix this. He also said, if my Democratic colleagues will join me and not play politics, but work to solve the problem, we can start to end family separation this week. But, of course, they don't want to do that. Dianne Feinstein has issued her own bill. She's calling it, of course, the always issues great names, Keep Families Together Act. But Keep Families Together Act would basically make it illegal to detain anybody coming across the border within 100 miles of the border. So, in other words, we just are going to let them in. That's Dianne Feinstein's fix. As a matter of fact, Mark Krikorian, Center for Immigration Studies, so which of the Democrats venting outrage is going to introduce targeted legislation to amend the trafficking bill and the Flores, which are the reasons illegal alien kids are separated from their illegal alien parents for more than a few days? And then Tom Cotton has weighed in on Senator Feinstein's, you know, Keep the Children Together bill, whatever the name of it is. Senator Cotton says Dems Keep Families Together Act is better called the Child Trafficking Encouragement Act. Show up at border with a minor and call him your child, and then you get released into the U.S. Children will be abducted and sold to drug cartels and slave traders as a free ticket into the United States. So you see the tragedy that is coming before us. And I want to tell you now, I'm going to turn to something else, because I realize it's probably very hard for most normal Americans to understand how wicked some people in the left are. It doesn't mean they all are. Some are pawns. I remember in the 60s when the hippie movement and the anti-nuclear movement and the anti-war movement and the make love not war movement was proceeding and marching across the country. There were honestly a handful of people who were hard leftists. They were socialists, communists. They were part of the Weather Underground or I've forgotten the acronym, but it's a anyway, it was a communist front organization. Some of them were just as serious as death, and they had death in mind. In fact, the Weather Underground tried to kill American soldiers and let off bombs in courthouses. They intended to kill. So you have a spectrum of people who are just, quite frankly, ignorant, willing pawns, useless idiots, sometimes in the press. So I'm not saying that all of them are intentionally wicked or even understand what it is they have attached themselves to. And by that, I'm not talking about people that want children not to be separated from their parents. I'm talking about the deeper underpinnings of using an issue like this to destroy the United States and Western civilization. And yes, that's really, look, Europe's having the same problem. Angela Merkel is probably going to lose her position as the head of Germany's government in probably maybe in the next 24 hours because of her position on immigration, because the German people, many of them have just had it. Not some of them. Some of them are willing accomplices. It's a problem worldwide because the deep, dark left slash communists want to destroy Western civilization. And really, honestly, at the heart of it is the desire to destroy Western culture, which is Judeo-Christian. That's really what it is. And so let me just illustrate to you how dark and ugly this is. Occupy Wall Street has just tweeted out something that is just unimaginable. And this is what it is. The post from Occupy Wall Street include instructions on how to kill ICE agents. It's a picture, and it's there's a caption that says, what to do if you encounter an ICE agent, And I'm going to read to you some of what else they say with illustrated drawings. If an ICE agent tries to take your child at the border, don't panic. Then it goes on to say, grab the ICE agent from behind and push your knife into his chest with an upward thrust breaking through his sternum. Number 5, reach into his chest and pull out his still beating heart. Number 6, hold his bloody heart out for all other agents to see and tell them that the same fate awaits them if they blink with your child again, with an illustration of a woman holding up the bleeding heart of an agent. Now, this, I could say a lot of things about this. Do you notice it's, as far as I know, it's still up on Twitter. You know what? Hate speech, you know, people that want to secure the borders, we're the haters. But here is Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street, tweeting this horrendous, vile, horrible stuff, encouraging the murder of ICE agents. This is how deep and dark and wicked some of the forces driving this are. We're going to put that on our Facebook page because I want you to see it. You have to see it. It's an article in the Washington Times. It's entitled, Occupy Wall Street Promotes Killing ICE Agents. Simple as that. Kirstjen Nielsen, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, went to a restaurant last night, maybe last night or the night before, to have her dinner. She's sitting in the restaurant when suddenly this begins. Let's listen.
Seeking asylum in the United States, we call on you to end family separation
and
abolish ICE.
Abolish ICE.
Abolish ICE.
Abolish ICE. Shame. 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 Shame.
All right. So then she's trying to sit there and eat with her companion, and then a little bit later on, this goes on for I think 10 minutes. I think the video goes on. Then they continue their attacks, a little different tactic. Let's listen to clip 11.
What's your salary, Kirsten? How much do you make locking up children?
No borders!
No walls! Sanctuary for all! No borders! No walls! Sanctuary for all! No borders! No walls! Sanctuary for all! No borders! No walls!
All right, so, you know, I don't know. That could be Occupy Wall Street. Who knows? And this is the state of affairs in this country. You know, Friday, I'm going to be doing an interview with James Simpson, who's done a whole expose. This particular expose is targeted about the SPLC. But more broadly, it talks about the radicalism, the wickedness of the far left. It talks about how it traces its roots in communism. Many of the things that they say are directly mirroring things that Vladimir Lenin said when he was developing communism, many of the things that Stalin did. You know, I was just watching this three-part series on Stalin. If you have not seen it, I recommend that you look this up. I don't know if it's on Netflix, but it's got to be somewhere. It's a three-part history of Stalin and his takeover of Russia. It will chill you to the bone. And in one speech at the end of the first segment, the first part, he quotes Adolf Hitler and saying something to the effect, I give anything to have the exact quote, I don't. Something to the effect that I am at this moment releasing you from any of those like inconvenient notions, things that just hinder us, like conscience. You are released from all conscience. You are allowed to kill, to steal, to lie, whatever it takes to move us to our, what, glorious cause. And then all the people cheer and laugh. This is not a joke. Lenin and the other grand thinkers, the ones that started the Frankfurt School, expressed their desire to break down and destroy Western civilization. They, of course, the communist part of it, part of it is to get rid of God and any notion of him. They outlawed him because it is absolutely an attack on God himself, even if many of the left don't understand that. They may actually think there is no God, but they don't understand there is a God. There is a God. And this is the attack of the enemy on him. How could I be say something so silly? Well, let's just think about Rules for Radicals with Saul Alinsky, who wrote Rules for Radicals. He's the American father, I think. We could call him that. I guess the Frankfurt School in Columbia might call themselves the father. I don't know. Maybe they're uncles together. But Saul Alinsky, who was Hillary Clinton's mentor and Barack Obama's through his writings, dedicated his book Rules for Radicals to Satan, the first, the first great rebel, Satan, Lucifer. Lucifer, he says. I dedicate this book to Lucifer, the first great rebel. That was the person he admired for how he had rebelled. This is all about separating and deconstructing, separating us from families, breaking down sexual mores, breaking down any kind of cohesion in society in terms of relationships. They use psychological warfare to do this, to shame and target and isolate, like they did with Kirsten. This is not new. This is right out of the communist playbook. We will shame people. We will isolate them, target them, and make it impossible for them to do principled things. We will, like a crowd, it's just the human nature not to be to be singled out like that. Who wants to live that way? Going to a restaurant and being recognized and being humiliated. And believe me, in Washington, D.C., Kirsten can probably expect that every night of the week if she goes out. This is how dangerous things have become. It's probably true in other states, too. And then, of course, yesterday I have to say that I don't think I'm going to have time to play these things, but I think it was CNN, Brooke Baldwin took on Chris Cabrera about the need to reform immigration. And she asks, you know, are you treating the children humanely? And of course, he says, of course we are. In fact, let's listen to clip six. We can at least listen to that.
No, and just let me just underscore some of what you're saying. You know, seeing a nine-year-old boy suffering heat stroke, seeing young girls come to you with Plan B or birth control pills because their parents provide them for them because they know the journey will involve them being raped. This is what you are seeing, and I can't even begin, Chris, to put myself in your shoes. But keeping the focus on the kids, you know, America is outraged by what is happening. And I want you, as you know, Border Patrol agent, can you assure everyone watching that you and your Border Patrol colleagues are treating these children humanely?
I can tell you with absolute certainty that they're being treated humanely. Most of our agents are parents. I've seen guys, and I've done it myself. You give your last bottle of water to a kid. You'll take a toy out of your car to give to one of these kids because you know the situation they're in.
All right, I'm going to interrupt him because we're running out of time. But the point is, now they're coming after ICE agents, Border Patrol agents, trying to demonize them, accuse them of mistreating, not doing their jobs. This is how the game is played. It's a very dangerous game, and we have to be smart and step up to the plate, and I know that we can. So let's continue to speak the truth fearlessly. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.